And now, Robert Trout on the news, direct from the NBC Newsroom in New York, presented by Pillsbury. This is the season for apple pie, pumpkin pie, cranberry pie, mince pie. And right now, America's largest selling pie crust mix, Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix, is celebrating its leadership with Pillsbury Pie Baking Festival. You'll find extra large supplies of the new Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix at your grocer's now. So start pleasing your family with your own wonderful homemade pies. It's easy, it's quick with Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix. You just add water, get tender, flaky crust every time. And remember, there's plenty in each package of Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix to make a big two-crust pie. Get a package soon. And now, Bob Trout with the latest news.
Secretary of State George Marshall predicts the pressure of world opinion exerted through the United Nations will force certain nations to cooperate in settling disputes by peaceful methods. Mr. Marshall made his prediction in Paris just a minute ago as part of the observance of the UN's third birthday, and he went on to say that the obstructive attitude of certain nations is the greatest blight on the UN record. He did not mention the certain nations by name, but no one had any doubt. John Foster Dulles, Governor Dewey's foreign affairs advisor, joined the ceremony, saying he believes peace can be maintained even if Russia does refuse to settle the dispute that's grown up over the Berlin blockade. Speeches in Paris on the anniversary. But in Moscow, the official Russian newspapers say the United Nations' third birthday finds the organization menaced by American policies. British Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin has flown over to Paris, presumably to attend tomorrow's meeting of the Security Council on the Berlin blockade. And the Security Council has been called into emergency session to consider Egypt's charge that the Jews have flagrantly violated the Holy Land truce. In Palestine, most of the fighting seems to have stopped temporarily, but former Secretary of the Treasury Henry Morgenthau and Curtis Roosevelt Boddicker, the grandson of the late president, came under Arab mortar fire today while touring the front near Jerusalem. More violence in the French coal fields. Some 2,000 soldiers and police forced 100 communist-led strikers to surrender one of the big coal mines in central France. And a hint of possible violence in South America. The State Department says it's received word that a state of siege has been proclaimed in Bolivia. Here in New York, the cruiser Fresno is dropping flowers into the waters of New York Harbor in memory of the men who died at sea during the war. And Governor Dewey in Albany said, in the interest of peace, we must make sure that the United States Navy continues to be the strongest in the world. That was Governor Dewey's only statement of the day, except to tell newsmen that his bad cold is much better. He leaves Albany tomorrow night on his final campaign swing, covering the big cities of New England and the Middle West a day behind Harry Truman. The president spent the day in the White House, resting after his return from Pittsburgh this morning and getting ready to climb aboard the presidential special train again tonight to wind up his record-breaking 300-speech, 30,000-mile campaign. This last trip ends in Independence, Missouri, where President Truman will vote. Governor Dewey spends Election Day at his upstate New York farm in Pawling. There are some people who still insist that the earth over which the campaign trains are puffing is flat, not round. Church overseer M.J. Minturn of that famous church in Zion, Illinois, has been studying those photographs taken from a rocket 57 miles above the White Sands Proving Ground in New Mexico, and he believes those pictures do not show any curve in the earth's surface. He says to the scientists, "When you have something that really proves the earth is round, let me know." And now for Pillsbury, here's Arthur Gary.
Thank you, Bob Trout. It's pie time. The Pillsbury Pie Baking Festival is now going on. Your grocer has extra supplies of Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix. The mix American women have made America's largest selling pie crust mix. Get a package. Get several packages and make your husband happy with light, tender, flaky crusted pies. He'll love them. Apple, cranberry, pumpkin, mince, whatever his favorites are. Get Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix and get baking soon. Listen again next Sunday at this time for Robert Trout in the News, brought to you by Pillsbury, greatest name in flour. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
WMAQ and WMAQ-FM, NBC in Chicago. Remember to listen for the fine music of the Robert Merrill Show at 4:30 today. The program will originate from Detroit. General Hilarity will greet the listener to the Ozzie and Harriet Show at 5:30 when Harriet decides to give Cupid some help, and then, of course, Jack Benny at 6.
Observing the third anniversary of its birth, a certain organization hears birthday greetings from certain Americans.
Happy United Nations.
What do they mean, united? They can't agree on anything.
Just another League of Nations?
The United Nations is a dead duck.
Just another debating society.
Talk, talk, talk. Yadda-da, yadda-da.
Why don't the nations learn to get along like people?
That's just the trouble. They do.
Living, 1948. Presented each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations, taking calendar note of the third birthday of the United Nations, holds up its radio mirror to reflect a balance sheet.
United Nations balance sheet. Assets.
Your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. If it's true, as has been said, that one out of three people in the United States does not know what the United Nations is or does, then it's high time that we who are living in 1948 found out. For most of the men who are running today's world are in complete agreement on one point, that the United Nations is the only answer to the world's number one problem, peace.
The only answer, you say?
Uh-huh.
Well, then God pity us.
Well, as an emotionally understandable reaction, yes, madam, but...
I know. What? I've got a son, Mr. Grauer. He's 19.
I see.
I have the best reason in the world for wanting to know
to
why...
To know why it is that in the UN the world has an instrument of positive, practical hope?
Yes.
Well, then, it's for people like you, Mrs. America, that we're on the air today.
Well, then give me facts, not words. I've heard all the fancy rhetoric about the UN. Tell me what it's done.
Well, it's a point well taken. For with criticism of the United Nations coming so glibly and from so many lips, it is important that we recall the plus side, that we realize that this fledgling composite of 58 nations has done something.
All right. I'm listening.
Listen, then, to what we in radio call a billboard.
Political. Plus sign.
The Security Council.
The Trusteeship Council.
Social, economic. Plus sign.
UNESCO.
UNICEF.
IRO.
WHO.
Oh, initials, initials. The world's in a soup. Alphabet soup. What do they mean?
Now, just a minute. They mean a great deal to a lot of people, and we're going to hear why. But first, suppose we talk politics. International politics. Before the ink was dry on the charter, the UN was confronted with the urgent problems of an ailing post-war world. Iran, Indonesia, Palestine, and many others.
The first, Iran.
The Security Council meeting in London, January 1946, opens its mail. A letter postmarked Iran.
According to tripartite agreement between the United States, Great Britain, and the USSR, troops of these nations were to be evacuated within 6 months after the conclusion of hostilities. The United States and Great Britain have kept this agreement. The USSR has not. As a result, the continued presence of...
That letter, a mere piece of paper, yes, except for the explosive words inscribed upon it, was the first grave challenge to the power of the United Nations, indeed to its survival. Were Soviet troops quartered in Iran a threat to peace? Needless now to recall the months of debate, evasion, indecision. Let's move on to that climactic moment in New York, the day when Russian delegate Gromyko, seeking by resolution to keep the Iranian question off the agenda, raised his hand to say...
There is no reason to consider that the situation in Iran and the complications which may arise are sufficient to be regarded as likely to disturb the peace and security of the world.
To which the delegate from Iran replied...
The refusal of Soviet authorities to allow the central government of Iran to deal with the Azerbaijan rebellion within its own territory is a breach of international law and of the Tripartite Treaty and the Tehran Declaration.
Wearily, Chairman Kuo of China puts the question.
Gentlemen, I think the debate is now closed. Those in favor of the Soviet resolution can raise their hands. There are three in favor. Therefore, the resolution is rejected.
Mr. President, are we to consider that the voting is complete?
Yes, Mr. Gromyko. We have three votes in favor of your resolution. Eight against.
Mr. President, as the representative of the Soviet Union, I am not able to participate further in the discussions of the Security Council, nor am I able to be present. And I therefore leave this meeting.
Gentlemen, there are now only 10 members of the Security Council. Does any member wish to speak?
Do you call that accomplishment, Mr. Grove?
Yes, but just a minute, Mrs. America. Not so fast. These matters take time. It is perfectly true that Mr. Gromyko's abrupt walkout alarmed the world with speculation. Would the Russians depart from the United Nations? They did not depart. And then 5 weeks later, May the 6th, 1946, the Iran radio...
The Iranian government announces that the last Soviet soldier left the province of Azerbaijan at 5 p.m. yesterday.
Call it moral pressure, if you will. But anyway, the Russians removed the cause of complaint. They evacuated Iran.
Well, maybe that is accomplishment in a way, but for the U.N., I'd certainly call it indirect accomplishment.
And isn't indirect accomplishment better than no accomplishment at all?
Well...
All right, now let's consider Indonesia.
Why, from what I've read about Indonesia, that case isn't settled yet.
Well, just listen.
For more than 300 years, Indonesia, the Netherlands East Indies, has been under Dutch colonial rule, a strategic part of Dutch economy.
During the war, occupied by the Japanese, over 3 million people killed, heavy destruction of rich oil and sugar refineries, damage to country and farmland.
After the war, chaos.
Heavy fighting reported in Java and Sumatra.
Dutch trying to restore order. Natives belligerent.
Indonesian Republic established as Dutch signed pact.
Military action continues in Netherlands East Indies.
Indonesians say situation cannot be solved without outside aid. Again ask UN for help.
Finally, they got that help. In August 1947, the Indonesian case was brought to the attention of the Security Council by the delegate from Australia. Result?
The Security Council requests that the two parties cease fire forthwith and settle their disputes by peaceful means. The Security Council offers the Dutch and Indonesians the services of a committee of good offices to arbitrate the problem.
Both parties met with that committee, Mrs. America, on board the USS Renville off Batavia. Result, as described by UN Secretary General Trygve Lie.
After 5 months of persistent effort, the Committee of Good Offices of the Security Council secured full acceptance of the ceasefire agreement.
But what I want to know is, did the shooting stop?
No, not everywhere or immediately. But what is important, they agreed to, in principle.
Well, that's a little better.
Yes, indeed, as Secretary General Lie put it.
The work of conciliation goes on while men and women work on the tasks of peaceful reconstruction instead of killing and being killed.
So you see, all is by no means red ink on the balance sheet of the United Nations. The Indonesian case brought forth several milestones along the road to peace.
The Security Council obtains agreement to stop shooting.
Thousands of lives saved.
Basic political agreements between two parties as basis for the solution of a problem.
Stage set for peace in Indonesia.
And just recently, October the 9th, 1948.
A Dutch-Indonesian conference at The Hague today closed with general agreement on steps to be taken in the transition of the East Indies to a United States of Indonesia.
About Palestine, Mr. Grauer. If the United Nations couldn't even protect the life of Count Bernadotte, its own mediator...
Yes, all nations and all peoples are grieved by the assassination of Count Bernadotte and by the Palestine problem, which seems so tragically stubborn. But now let's be fair to this organization, which after all is only 3 years old. Or again, as Trygve Lie points out...
This was a problem that had defied all effort to solve it extending over the past 30 years. It was brought to the United Nations for settlement by the mandatory power of the United Kingdom, which announced its intention of giving up the mandate. These facts stand out. The General Assembly recommended the creation of a Jewish state. Israel was proclaimed. The final outcome cannot be seen.
No, but if you were listening closely a matter of days and hours ago, you could have heard a new sound from far across the world. Yes, the sound of a truce.
Yes, Mr. Grauer, but already that truce has been violated.
I agree. But the point is, the principle of the truce was established and was acknowledged by both sides. Too soon, perhaps, to hail the fruits of peace, but not too soon to recognize the seeds of hope. before we leave politics and the UN, just one more plus sign. Western Samoa.
Samoa? Is that place important?
Any place in the world today is important. Now, you asked facts. Samoa is a fact about the Trusteeship Council.
The Trusteeship Council, now, what's that?
Well, let the voice of the United Nations Charter tell you.
Members of the United Nations, which have the responsibilities for the administration of territories whose people have not yet attained a full measure of self-government, accept as a sacred trust the obligation to promote the well-being of the inhabitants of these territories.
I suppose you're going to tell me that one of these territories is Western Samoa.
Ah, you're right with us now, Mrs. America, I'm happy to say. Yes, and Western Samoa is only one of nine such territories, with 15 million inhabitants in all, sheltered under the international trusteeship system of the UN.
Western Samoa, a mid-Pacific island of 1,130 square miles, population about 71,000, mandated to New Zealand November 1946.
We humbly beseech that Western Samoa be granted self-government.
Sounds reasonable. Did they get it?
Well, this request by Western Samoa raised some realistic questions.
Who wants this self-government?
A crowd of native politicians?
Or the people themselves?
Are the people ready for self-government?
And what does New Zealand, the protector state, what does New Zealand have to say about this?
As a matter of fact, it was New Zealand herself which actually transmitted the petition to the UN Trusteeship Council asking what could be done to examine the matter. Result, the council sent a visiting mission to Western Samoa with instructions to investigate these questions and the validity of the petition. The first such mission in world history. Traveling by car, boat, canoe, and on foot, this mission interviewed men and women in all parts of the island. And upon these interviews, Francis B. Sayre, head of the UN mission, reported,
"Only a dramatic movement towards self-government can satisfy the aspirations of these people. The mission recommends that a government of Western Samoa be established."
And such a government is being established, with New Zealand continuing as advisor and protector.
Well, Mr. Grauer, the UN seems to be moving in the right direction on these problems, but it doesn't seem to have reached any goals. Yes. Iran, Indonesia, Palestine,
yes.
Samoa...
Yes, quite true, Mrs. America. But if we can't claim to have settled anything, is it any more fair to say that we've failed?
No, I suppose not.
Look, just in fancy, glance back over your shoulder for a moment at the retreating figure of Gromyko walking out of that council door.
Oh, yes.
Now take a look in your mind's eye. Inside the stately chamber of the Palais de Chaillot, where the General Assembly is meeting these days in Paris.
Yes?
You see that white-haired, blunt-featured, ruddy-looking gentleman slouched over his desk?
Yes.
It's Andrei Vyshinsky. He is now the delegate of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics at the Security Council.
Oh.
He's reading a newspaper. He's doodling on his pad. He's studiously boycotting the discussion. But he's there. Unlike his colleague of 3 years ago, this time Russia has not taken a powder. So much for politics.
Which, I suppose, brings us back to the alphabet again.
Yeah, all right, if you wish. So, let's talk about UNESCO.
Let's see now. That would be the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization.
Right. It's based on this idea.
Since wars begin in the minds of men, it is in the minds of men that the defenses of peace must be constructed.
Ignorance of each other's ways and lives has been a common cause of that suspicion and mistrust between the peoples of the world, which have all too often broken into war.
That makes sense. But what's UNESCO done? What's it accomplished in the minds of men?
For one thing, established the largest international educational agency in the history of the world, at a cost of about $6 million a year, just about the cost of one light cruiser. UNESCO has declared war on illiteracy and is right now doing much to spread the three R's on a world scale.
UNESCO has shipped thousands of pens, pencils, erasers, textbooks, notebooks, and writing paper to educational projects in 440 member countries.
UNESCO is constantly trying to supply the right answers to questions like this.
In Norway, the first year after the war was over was the hardest year of teaching I ever had. The children seemed so different. And perhaps I was different, too. What can we do?
Our French children are hardened to the fact of death. How can we make them more sensitive to the importance of life?
We in Poland have many orphans in our classes, and many who have lost one parent. How can we best help them forget?
In Italy, our children are quite alone in the world. Orphans, cripples, homeless, physically and morally abandoned. What to do about them?
The most tragic victims of a world wrecked by war are its children. Knowing this, UNESCO is building children's villages in many parts of Europe. Typical of these, and the model for many more to come, is the children's village of Pestalozzi in Switzerland.
Here come orphans from all over Europe, ranging in age from 4 to 14. Each child has a history of horror. I remember one little girl of 12, blonde, with big blue eyes.
My name is... Well, my name doesn't matter anymore. I came here from Poland. I don't mind the days now. Sometimes the days are nice. They are good to us. They feed us, play with us. But at night, it's still the night. Each day at bedtime, the house mother takes my hand and goes with me to the cellar. Unless we do this, I cannot sleep. I must go down to the cellar to make sure there are no bodies there. You see, the last time I saw my mother and father, they were being shot in the cellar.
The village of Pestalozzi was established to heal just such wounds. Here there are 24 buildings, one for each country on the continent of Europe, where children of the various nations live under the supervision of an adult of their own country. Here the shattered hearts and broken spirits of the children are being mended in a manner which is an inspiring example of world cooperation.
Heartwarming, Mr. Grauer.
And speaking of children, no small part of the work of the United Nations has been that of the International Children's Emergency Relief Fund, supported entirely by government funds and private contributions. Main functions, the supply of food, clothing, medical aid. The accomplishments of the International Children's Emergency Relief Fund, or UNICEF as it's called, have been tremendous. Here again, in the words of Prigvalli,
contributions so far received are enabling the fund to provide a daily supplementary meal of protective foods for more than 4 million children in Europe and the Far East. While in Europe alone, some 15 million children exposed to tuberculosis infection are being immunized. This week, United Nations Week, UNICEF, which is better known in some areas than the UN itself, this week UNICEF was responsible for the following accomplishment. So small in itself, so tremendous in its implications.
Hier, Liebchen, ein bisschen mehr für dich.
Dankeschön.
That, my dear lady, was the sound of the 1 billionth meal being served this week by UNICEF, an agency of the United Nations, remember, to a hungry European child.
That's wonderful.
As many of the unspectacular accomplishments of the UN are wonderful, Mrs. America.
And I'm beginning to realize that many of them are quite unknown to most Americans.
Now, let's consider the International Refugee Organization.
In July 1947, the International Refugee Organization took over responsibility for refugees and displaced persons, performing the work of UNRWA, the Armies of Occupation, and the Red Cross.
The first real effort by men of goodwill to find a solution for one of the most heartbreaking problems of the war.
Painful in its human aspects, delicate in its technical side, extremely difficult from a political viewpoint.
Problem, what to do about the repatriation and the resettlement of millions of homeless people.
And what did they do?
Well, here, for a change, are some statistics.
In the first year of operation, IRO assisted in repatriation or resettlement of 265,000 refugees or displaced persons.
73 countries on 5 continents received these unhappy people. Now happy people, most of them engaged in productive work.
Present rate of departures from IRO camps, 20,000 monthly.
During the year, June 1948 to June 1949, IRO hopes to repatriate or resettle 300,000 homeless human beings.
Another item on the plus side of the ledger. You see, these are facts on which a solid hope can be built. The United Nations has a motto for this week. We can work it out together, or we can fight it out alone. Now, listen to how they worked it out together in the World Health Organization, which has been quietly active in many countries without fanfare or headlines, for the good of mankind.
Egypt, September 1947, the Valley of the Nile. In the town of El Qurain, east of the Nile Delta, a local health officer has a visit from an official of the Egyptian Ministry of Health.
Thank you for coming as quickly as you could.
What is the matter, my friend? You look troubled.
So were you, I think, when you looked in that microscope.
Then those five suspicious cases were not food poisoning?
Look in the microscope. Well, what do they look like? How are they shaped?
They are shaped like commas.
Do you know what that means?
Cholera.
Cholera.
Cholera carries the touch of sudden death, often within 12 hours. In 1902, out of 40,000 Egyptians stricken, 34,000 died.
The cholera vibrio is waterborne, so all waterways leading to the Nile have to be closed immediately. If the canals are infected, the whole Nile Valley is in danger. We will get troops here at once. Then we'll start a mass inoculation of all the people.
Inoculation? But how? We don't have the vaccine, the hypodermic needles. How can we inoculate 20 million people?
We are members of the United Nations, are we not?
World Health Organization action on emergency scale.
Cholera vaccine shipped to Egypt by air from United States, China, Japan, Indochina, and South Korea.
Blood plasma, hypodermic needles, and other supplies sent within 72 hours of request.
Almost all of Egypt's 20 million people inoculated.
Within 8 weeks, cholera epidemic stopped in its tracks.
Here was ample demonstration of effective action by the World Health Organization on an international scale. The first time, Mrs. America, in history, that an epidemic which formerly had spread at the rate of more than 1,000 new cases a day was checked, and in so short a time. Just one example of world health cooperation. Another asset on the balance sheet of the United Nations.
Well, Mr. Grauer, I asked you for facts. And when you give me facts in terms of human lives, of people in Samoa who want to be free, of children in Switzerland who ask only to be allowed to live, of lives saved by the thousands, perhaps the tens of thousands in the Valley of the Nile, well, then you've put it in terms that I can understand. Maybe, Mr. Grauer, at this stage of the game, we've just been expecting too much. The United Nations is a boy whom we've been expecting to do a man's work. Perhaps we'd just better give him a chance. We've got to believe in it.
We Americans, living in 1948, are mindful of the failures of the United Nations. Failure to establish an international police force. Failure to come to grips with certain specific problems. Failure to reach a solution for the control of atomic energy. We do not minimize the gravity of the explosive crisis which right this moment challenges the power of the Security Council in the Palais de Chaillot in Paris. In fact, the very life of the United Nations and consequently the future of the world. But as we examine the assets of the balance sheet, it is proper to ponder this question. What would have happened to the world during the past 3 years had there been no United Nations?
Living 1948 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC public affairs staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Today's script was written by Bryce Disk, Jr. The music was conducted by Milton Kadams. Program direction by Jack Cuney. Your narrator, Ben Grauer. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1948 by listening next week to another drama document on the subject of you and your citizenship, entitled Let's Sit This One Out. You're invited to NBC's Sunday Night Party. 2.5 hours of rollicking entertainment tonight. Begin with Ozzie and Harriet, then listen and laugh straight through with Jack Benny and his gang, The Adventures of Phil Harris and Alice Faye, followed by Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Fred Allen tops off the merriment with tonight's guest, Dale Cargany. Remember, for the best time of your life, the best time is tonight on most of these NBC stations. Robert Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.